Welcome to another edition of the Media Schwitz. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift, and joining me from New York is Rafat Ali. Welcome back. It's been a few months now since we've been on the air.
Yeah, welcome back to you too. It's been 3 months, I think.
Yeah, it's been almost 3 months. So
yeah.
We kind of missed the whole summer of action.
We missed the whole summer of action. And how are you doing?
I'm doing better. I had a kidney transplant, received a kidney from my fiance Renee, who I will be forever grateful to.
Wow, you better marry her now.
Yeah, no question. How do you even say thank you or start to say thank you for something like an organ, getting an organ from someone? So it's pretty amazing. But we've definitely had it's been kind of a long, slow recovery, but we're both doing better and getting back to work. And we had a lot of time to watch movies and TV shows and everything and catch up on books and reading and everything. So, you know, it was good just to relax for a while.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, it's at least when it was in the summertime, it's slightly slower on everything else. So it's a nice time to also recover. I mean, it's a good recovery period if there's any.
Yeah, so that's true. But I guess you kind of had the opposite experience this summer by launching your startup Skift, which seemed to get a really good response. I mean, there was a lot of coverage about it, and the site looks great.
Thanks. Yeah, no, we had the opposite. We had to run. I mean, as you know, I've been teasing on the show as well as just talking to you generally about Skift, and you've known the idea for a while. We launched July 30th, which summer isn't necessarily, depth of summer isn't necessarily the best time, but it's as good as it. I guess we were ready, we had to launch, so we launched. And there's been very good response so far, tons of press coverage, of course, but that means minimal in long term. People seem to be reacting to the thesis we had, which is bringing all the sectors of the travel together, covering it from a news information perspective, and then building a larger data business out of it as well, as well as the consumer brand aimed at business travelers. So for those who don't know, if you go to skift.com/about, you will see a lot about the company and about what we're trying to do. And we are five people now, and well, actually four, soon to be five, and we moved into a co-working space, which is a whole sort of new experience in itself, working as part of a co-working space.
Is that in Manhattan?
Yeah, it is in Manhattan, and it's one of the new ones that opened recently. It's called Alley NYC. And I think we are the oldest people in the whole building. Because these are all young entrepreneurs in their 20s or something. So I think we are the veterans here.
You're the gray beards.
Something like that. But yeah, gray beards and little hair, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep getting some updates from you on that and how things are going, because I think for our audience, the Media Twitch audience, I think people are definitely curious about what you're doing with that, and we'll definitely want to know, you know, as things happen, and you know, what works and what fails and everything in between.
Well, we're very glad to have you back. Glad you're recovering well, and glad you've had some downtime to read up on books. And,
yeah.
What was your favorite book during the downtime?
That's a good question. I think one of my favorite things is I read a biography of Todd Browning, an old school kind of horror movie director who directed Dracula and Freaks and some other movies. So I'm very into silent films, and I think one of the first things that I actually did getting out was going to the Silent Film Festival in San Francisco. So I've been very much into kind of silent films and old films, and just reading about directors and kind of reliving. It feels like there's a lot of things going on in my life that relate to kind of the 30s and Prohibition. I read the book about Prohibition, and then saw the Ken Burns series, and now I'm starting to watch Boardwalk Empire. So I feel like with speakeasies and everything that are happening here in San Francisco and in New York and other places, it's kind of funny how a lot of that era from Prohibition in 20s and 30s just seems to keep coming up over and over again. So on our show today, we're going to talk about online video, and especially in the run-up to the political conventions that are coming up and the elections. First, we'll talk about HuffPost Live, the new 12-hour-a-day live video show that's going to be running on Huffington Post 5 days a week, and we'll have Roy Seekoff, the founding editor of the Huffington Post, join us, and we'll have Liz Shannon Miller from GigaOm also talking about that, and then we'll have Olivia Ma from YouTube come on and talk about YouTube's new election hub, where they're bringing on video from 8 different media companies and highlighting them, as well as live streaming the action from the upcoming Republican and Democratic conventions and all the debates. First, we're going to talk about HuffPost Live, a new video channel that launched at live.huffingtonpost.com. They hired 100 people to staff the channel and are programming 12 hours a day, 5 days a week, with highlights archived for nights and weekends. It's one long rolling talk show with guests coming on via Google Plus Hangouts, including regular HuffPost commentators. So far, it's had some mixed reviews, but they're in it for the long haul. And joining us to talk about HuffPost Live is Roy Seekoff, the founding editor of Huffington Post, president and co-creator of HuffPost Live. Before helping launch the Huffington Post, he was a writer, producer, and on-air correspondent for Michael Moore's TV Nation show, and served as communications director for Arianna Huffington's 2003 gubernatorial campaign. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely.
And then we also have Liz Shannon Miller, who currently works as a staff writer on G4's Attack of the Show, and she writes a regular column for the tech site GigaOm about online video. So Roy, why don't we start with you and just tell us more about the idea behind HuffPost Live, why you guys decided to launch this now?
Well, really, it was something we've always wanted to increase the amount of original video content on the Huffington Post, and but we, video is a difficult game, and so you want to play it smart, otherwise it could become, a pit that you sink down into. So once we became part of AOL, we started discussing of ways we could use the resources. They had two great state-of-the-art studios already in place in New York and in Los Angeles. So we started just thinking, well, how could we utilize that? And the idea came up, well, why don't we do a live streaming network that uses the Huffington Post as its real-time script? I mean, HuffPost puts up 2,000 pieces of content a day, so there's a lot of stuff there that we could use as starting points to spark conversations among the HuffPost community. And so that was really the inciting idea behind it. And then as we got into it, we started thinking, well, really, what's the difference maker? What's going to separate us from all the other people kind of getting into the video space and looking to do, more video streaming video? And for me, it became really apparent that it's the community that the Huffington Post has. We have this very active, vibrant community that's left over 175 million comments since we launched. And when we dove into those comments, we realized that most of them, in fact, 70% of them, were being left in response to another comment. So it turned out people were not just commenting on HuffPost, but they were actually having conversations on HuffPost. So we thought we could bring those conversations and put them front and center in everything that we do at HuffPost Live. And once we made that decision, it became our North Star. And we decided to double down on engagement, and it changed everything. I co-created this with Gabriel Lewis, who works with us. He's now the executive editor here at HuffPost Live. And once we realized that we were going to double down on engagement, it changed all the decisions that we made. It changed the decisions that we made about technology. It changed the decisions that we made about our design, about our programming, about the kind of people we were hiring, both in front of and behind the camera. So that really became the difference maker for us.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing you notice when you check out HuffPost Live is that you're really including, not only do you have kind of a stream of people commenting as people are talking, but you're bringing the commenters into Hangouts, and they're basically going kind of on the air, so to speak. And you have the segment called Defend Your Comment, where you actually, there's always people and trolls and comments making these kind of outrageous claims, and I guess you're actually kind of calling them in and saying, okay, defend your comment on the air.
Yeah, I mean, it's for me, it's less the trolls, but if you look at the HuffPost community, very smart comments are being left. It's not the usual kind of just flame throwing. We don't allow that. We pre-moderate all of our comments on HuffPost because we want to have a non-toxic atmosphere. So there's people who disagree, and they disagree passionately, but they do it articulately and respectfully. And so sometimes we thought, wouldn't it be great to have somebody come on, and if they've left a really strong comment on a blog post, to have them come on and defend their comment, and perhaps, you know, have a dialogue with the commenter, with the blogger himself or herself. So that's been a really fun segment. But you're right, we're bringing the people in. We're trying to lower the bar, not on quality, but on the ability for people to join the conversation. Because I think we're living in an era now where it's about participation. It's not just about, you know, people laying back and having something told to them. They want to be a part of it. They want to be a part of the national conversation. And so we wanted to make that as easy as possible. So as you say, people could leave written comments, but they can also leave a video comment if they're not quite ready to come on the air, or they can put up their hand and say, hey, I really think I have something to add to this segment, and I want to come on and join you live. And that dynamic has really informed everything else. When people come to the site, they'll see that we have other things such as a resource well, so that you can read up on the segment that's going to happen before you come on. So when you come on, you're on a level playing field. You're not saying, oh, Mr. Expert, I have a question for you. You're saying, you know, I read the story that you wrote and I disagree with you, and here's why. And I think that's kind of an exciting change.
What about the business behind the site? You know, everyone talks about the need for, you know, video inventory to sell. And I know you guys have a couple sponsors on there, but it doesn't seem really laden with ads. That doesn't seem like what you're trying to do at the outset. What are you thinking? Is this just about building kind of time on site and getting people to go to other stories and things like that?
Well, there's two halves to it. I mean, or maybe there's 10 halves, if that's possible. Is that up to five? But, you know, one of the things is, yes, we're very much interested in having a user experience that's appealing and that draws people in. So we didn't want it to, you know, have banner ads all over the place and just continually be interrupted by traditional commercials, because we want to have a real kind of conversation, not sound bites, not, you know, oh, we got to stop, I'm sorry, there's great things being said, but it's time for a commercial. We didn't want to have that happen, so we decided to have different kind of sponsorships where we integrate the brands, our sponsors, Cadillac, Verizon, into some of the programming. But beyond that, the business model also includes the fact that there's a lot of video on demand, because you're right. Everybody's looking to come up with more premium video inventory. There's a greater demand for it among advertisers. So on the business side, HuffPost Live is really a way of creating a lot of premium video content at scale. It's actually very cost efficient because we're not spending all day, shooting and editing a 6-minute video. We're creating 12 hours of original programming, which we then cut into clips and segments that we show throughout the Huffington Post and AOL universe, and also syndicate it out. And those have pre-roll on them. So that's the traditional model, you know, because that's how we presented this. Was there was two sides to it. On the one side, there's the traditional video on demand pre-roll advertising model, and on the other hand, there's this sort of never been done before live. How are people going to engage with this programming?
So, Roy, this is early, I guess. It's been, what, 2 weeks now?
Not even. A week and a half. I'm coming to this Thursday, right? So it's the day nine.
Any day nine lessons that you didn't know on day one?
Yes, there's many. I mean, that's the great thing. You know, we've approached this incredibly open-minded, with the idea that we were going to be nimble and we were going to be open to what viewers and the experience of doing it taught us, as opposed to just sort of rigidly saying, this is what we're doing and we don't care what anybody says. So, you know, we've been, first of all, pleasantly surprised by the level of engagement that we're seeing from our community. You know, a week or so before we launched, we had our, you know, Kevin Costner moment where, what if we build it and they don't come? Kind of fear. But they've actually come, and they're engaging in a very active way. And their engagement is of a very high level. I mean, we're getting people to come on the show who are very articulate and have strong points of view, have skin in the game about the things that they're talking about. So we're learning. For instance, I'll give you a perfect example. I've been very pleased by what I just described as the level and the quality of the people who are putting their hand up to come on and join the segments that we're doing. So Wednesday of last week, day three, I woke up and I thought, we should start doing even more of that. Let's bring them in even more. What if we had a segment that was really just based around our community members and what they were passionate about? We were having sort of host chats where the hosts were discussing the stories that caught their interest. But what if we allowed community members to come in and say, this is the story that I'm passionate about. This is the story that I'm sharing with my friends that I'm, you know, talking about on chat and on social media. And, you know, 2 hours later, we had our first community sound off segment, and it was great. The level of discourse was really high, and I was very pleased. And so since that happened, we've upped those, and we're doing that a lot more.
Liz, I'm curious, what's your opinion of HuffPost Live and what they're doing? I know you've been covering online video for some time, and we've seen a lot of these kinds of efforts to do some kind of live online video. I mean, Wall Street Journal is doing it, and a few other places are doing it. What do you think stands out about what HuffPost Live is doing so far?
What I found really interesting about checking it out was that it kind of managed to combine the cable news experience with that of essentially a web chat room. And that ended up actually being kind of, you know, it was something I felt comfortable just kind of enjoying passively, but also could see the appeal of enjoying it, you know, actively as well. Especially given the, you know, you could write a tweet and end up online. End up participating in the conversation element. I think that there's a lot of potential there, and it also seems like a really smart way of, you know, spreading the HuffPo brand to be much more essentially like the modern version of a CNN or the future version of a CNN.
I had a follow up question for you, Roy. The timing from the elections point of view, election coming up, like how dedicated will you be beyond what you are right now on the election as of course October comes up, or even next week as the RNC starts?
Indeed. HuffPost was the site itself was obviously very involved in the 2008 election. It was a big part of our growth. There was very memorable things that happened as part of that. And so I'm very much excited to have HuffPost Live launching right here as we start getting into the thick of it. And indeed, we are planning to do a lot of special programming around it. For instance, starting the next 2 weeks, we're doing things called the Shadow Conventions. Back in 2000, Ariana co-convened a pair of conventions that ran concurrently with the two major parties' conventions in Philadelphia and Los Angeles back in 2000 to look at issues that weren't being discussed by either major party. And we're doing the same thing again. We decided, but this time, since, so much has changed in the last 12 years, that we would use the platform of HuffPost and now HuffPost Live to do them virtually. Why go down there and bring a whole contingent of people and do this whole brick and mortar kind of convention? So we're going to have these virtual conventions where we're going to be discussing, interestingly enough, the same three issues, because over the last 12 years, they've gotten worse. And these are the influence of money on our politics, poverty and jobs, and the failed war on drugs.
So now I'm curious, because I notice in the format you guys have now, it's like kind of there's a whole bunch of upcoming segments. You do it for a certain amount of time. It seems kind of programmed, based on things that are happening. But if there's a real breaking news item that happens, I don't know, you know, something really big either on the political front or just U.S. news, I mean, would you kind of rip your programming apart and just say, we're going to look at this for the next 2 hours or something?
I'll give you two answers, and they're not contradictory, even though they're opposites. One is, you know, we're not about breaking news. I think people are getting their news in many places, among them using social media. That's happening very rapidly. I don't think we're trying to play the old game of, can we be the first ones to say this thing that's happening? There's a lot of outlets for that, and that's fine. We don't want to do that. We want to have conversations sparked by the news. We sort of joke among ourselves that they can tell you the thing. We want to have the conversation that's the thing about the thing. What's the larger discussion that comes out of, you know, if otherwise it's just presentational. This thing happened. Fine. There's no real conversation around that. We're about conversations. So what's the larger conversation that comes around it? That said, if there is something, you know, very important, either socially, politically, or anything in the current events that warrants a discussion that people want to talk about, we wouldn't be adverse to it. For instance, if we had been on online, on the air, whatever you want to call it, when President Obama gave his interview to Robin Roberts that he, you know, changed his position on gay marriage, people wanted to talk about it. They really came to HuffPost, and you know, we saw a massive spike in the commenting. So if we had had HuffPost Live up and running at the time, we would have found a way to have that conversation. But we wouldn't make a big deal out of telling you this thing happened or trying to analyze it. I think, you know, one of the responses that I've been most pleased with from reviewers and users and the people who are getting feedback is we're not doing the same repetitive, endless banging on the same, you know, three stories that you find on cable. You know, we cover stuff, but it's not, you know, we're not going to do an hour to talking about, you know, Aiken's comments, and then the next hour do another take on it just from a different host, and then a third host comes on and does another hour about Aiken. You know, at that same time, I think if you looked at what we were doing, we were covering a wide range of things, and that's one of our goals, is over the 12 hours, is not to be just hitting the same thing again and again and again, just using a different voice.
Well, thanks. Appreciate you joining us about that. And on the issue of elections, we're going to talk to Olivia Ma and add her into the conversation and talk about what they're doing with elections. So YouTube recently announced a new elections hub that will live stream the entirety of both Republican and Democratic conventions, as well as the presidential and vice presidential debates for the first time. This elections hub will include video from ABC News, Al Jazeera, New York Times, Univision, even BuzzFeed, among other outlets. Joining us is Olivia Ma, YouTube's news and politics manager. She oversees YouTube's news programming strategy, working closely with both news organizations and citizen reporters using the site to share news video around the world. Olivia has produced 3 YouTube interviews with President Obama and last fall's Fox News Google GOP primary debate. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much.
So, Olivia, tell us more about this hub and just how it's varied from your previous efforts during elections. 2008, that was a while ago in web time, of course.
Sure.
And what are you guys doing with this hub? I guess it's different from what you've done before.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, we're seeing that YouTube is becoming a more and more important destination for people looking for news on the web, especially political news. And so we wanted to create a one-stop shop on YouTube for election coverage. This channel, which we're calling the YouTube Elections Hub, you know, is a single destination that people can visit every day between now and November 6th to watch the latest election coverage and sort of stay up to date with what's happening in the world of politics through video. I think, you know, what's different about this from what we did in 2008 is really that more and more news organizations are engaging with YouTube on the platform. So we are working with 8, you know, news organizations, which you just mentioned, to be our official partners in the hub. And they'll be featuring both their live and on-demand programming throughout the election cycle and contributing sort of their own unique perspective to the race.
And how will they choose what goes into the hub? Is it just, will it be kind of their picking, their editorial choices as far as what they put on there? Do you guys have some editorial say in what gets featured?
Yeah, so we are leading that to the partners. Each of the partners is providing a certain amount of live coverage and then some on-demand videos as well. And so we've sort of, you know, given them the editorial control completely to decide what they want to feature in their tab within the hub for each of these major events. But each of them will be providing some live and on-demand content. We're also working with our partners over at Storyful, who will be curating sort of the hottest political videos of the day on the hub. So this could include, you know, partner videos from news organizations, but it also might include videos from the candidates, viral videos like the Chicago Young Republicans version of Call Me Maybe, which hit YouTube earlier this week. So Storyful will be doing some of the curation on the hub, but each individual partner will also have the editorial discretion to choose which videos they want to feature there.
Hi, this is Liz. I have a question. How are you planning on, to what level are you working with the individual campaigns to include them in the hub?
So this hub is really more about providing the sort of, you know, the coverage and analysis. We are the official, YouTube is the official live stream provider for both the Republican and the Democratic National Convention committees. So YouTube will be the underlying platform that each of the campaigns and the convention committees will be using to live stream the conventions. So we are partnering with the conventions on that that piece of it.
Did you see, Olivia, there's a new study that came out from the Project in Excellence in Journalism about how people are getting their, I think it's actually coming out today, about how people are getting their political news, and I think part of that was with videos, and there were, I guess what they were saying was, you know, people are actually getting more of their news from the candidates themselves and from ads and think, you know, from than they are from news organizations. Are you seeing that as well on the popularity of things on YouTube?
You know, I think sometimes that's the case and sometimes it's not. I mean, it really depends on the individual video and what the topic is. I also think that there's, you know, a user-generated element that comes into play as well, that's a sort of a third bucket, if you will. You know, I think there are certain characteristics that make people respond really well to video, and particularly on YouTube, you know, being genuine, direct, having an element of, you know, unexpected quality to the video. And often candidates and citizens can stumble onto that mix and create something that's pretty compelling. But that said, you know, news organizations are producing lots of terrifically compelling news video more than ever before. And YouTube is becoming an increasingly important place for news organizations to sort of, you know, reach new audiences with that video. So I think it really kind of depends on the video, but we're certainly seeing that, you know, all three different types of content creators, the candidates themselves, news organizations, and sort of everyday citizens are all kind of have an equal footing on YouTube.
So would where would a campaign ad fit into YouTube's election coverage?
So I think that we have Storyful, you know, who's working with us to actually do the curation. If you go to youtube.com/politics, which is where the election hub lives, you'll see that when you land on that page, there's a section of that we call highlights. And those are curated videos that Storyful will be selecting every day that sort of represents the hottest political videos of the moment. And so that could include news organizations' videos, but it also could include campaign videos, you know, the latest campaign ad or viral videos that individual users are uploading.
Roy, I'm curious from Huffington Post point of view, you guys obviously are now pushing into video with HuffPost Live, but how much do you guys use, how do you use YouTube as an organization? Because I know a lot of news organizations consider, you know, what do they put on YouTube? What do they host themselves? You know, what different platforms they can use for video? How do you guys view YouTube?
It's been a, you know, an incredible resource. You know, YouTube launched 2 months before the Huffington Post did back in 2005, and it's been an integral part of what we present to the audience, because that's one of our things, is that we don't think we're the only place in the world that has some kind of monopoly on good information and good content. So we like to tell, you know, people who come to our site that we're going to link them to the best stuff that's out there or embedded in the site in the case of, you know, YouTube videos. So that's in terms of us using YouTube just as a platform for the material that is up there and that we then feature in our stories. As far as us, we have, you know, a YouTube page, HuffPost Live does, and we are populating it with some of our best content. So very much, you know, a case of we want to go where people are, and that's one of the places that a lot of people are.
No question. Well, thanks, guys, for joining us. Appreciate it.
You bet. Glad to have you guys back on the air.
Absolutely. Really good to have you back.
Okay, take care, guys.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yep, bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift. I want to thank my co-host, Rafat Ali, as well as our guests, Roy Seekoff from The Huffington Post, Liz Miller from GigaOM, and Olivia Ma from YouTube. Also want to thank PBS and the Knight Foundation for making this podcast possible. Be sure to check out all the news, polls, and events over at PBS Media Shift at pbs.org/mediashift and our sister site, Idealab, at pbs.org/idealab and our new site, Collaboration Central, at collaborationcentral.org. We'll catch you next week.